If you have your Bibles, go ahead and be turning to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 is where we're going to start. And we're going to be in the book of Ecclesiastes for the majority of the lesson this morning. Before we get started, though, I did want to kind of give my own personal few remarks here. Thank you. Thank you for having me. But, like, that's real small in the totem pole of things I actually want to thank you for, but thank you all for having me. Whenever somebody comes and like presents some lessons, you think, oh, it's great. They're like kind of sort of teaching us some stuff. Like, we gain a whole lot more than you do. Being able to be with y'all, spend time with you, talk with you, pray with you. I feel like I've gained a whole lot more than I've given this past week, and I appreciate that. But also thank you for what you do in the kingdom. I thank you that God has the rule and authority in your lives. Thank you that you live so close to the capital of this nation, but you know what nation you're really a part of. I'm appreciative for that. And so I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. And I hope that y'all can continue to do what you're doing for God with fervor, with zeal, with the goal of pleasing Him. All right, so that's also, sorry, I forgot about this. Thank you, Hodges, for hosting me. Like, I mean, for a week, they gave me a lot of coffee, and they let me eat peanut butter, like, the things I like to do. And here's the thing I appreciate the most. Like, I'm a boring dude, and they, like, let me do my boring stuff. So they didn't, like, force me to do a ton of stuff, which I appreciate. So he was talking about me being relaxed. I'm just boring. So there's that. All right, Book of Ecclesiastes. What's your life worth? Think about, like, just, what are you worth? Is there, like, so when I asked you that question, what came to your mind? Was there, like, a certain amount of money that you thought, I am worth this much? Was there, like, again, some thoughts or some principles? Like, these are my values. This is what I'm worth. What are you worth? In the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon's trying to figure this out for himself. He has a little bit of everything. Excuse me. He has a lot of bit of everything. And he still has a hole. And he's trying to figure out why. There's this emptiness, or the way he'll call it, this vanity inside of him. And he's trying to figure out, what is his purpose? Why is he here? I think in one way or another, we've all asked ourselves that question. Who am I? What's my purpose? Why am I here? Who am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to do it? Is there anything that I'm going to do that's going to have any real value? It's another thing that I think people wrestle with. You know, you do and do and do it. And you get to the end of your life, is it worth anything? I'll tell y'all why I love this book so much. My father passed away of pancreatic cancer about 2 years ago. He was 72. And if you know anything about pancreatic cancer, once you get it, you're gone. It just takes you and goes. It's not a process. You don't fight it. We found out he had cancer in January. He passed away in February. And I flew up to New York. And I was with him for the weekend. And it was the last time, and I'm like, I'm really not emotional, I promise you, I'm trying not to get emotional, but I remember the last conversation I had with my father. I asked him, so now what? My father was not a godly man. He didn't think he was godly. He didn't try to be godly. But I asked him, so now what? Where do you think you're going to go? What about everything that you did? What's the point of that now? And his reply to me was, I don't know, but I wish I had more time to find out. That's the one thing he didn't have. This book is special to me because it helps me appreciate my mortality. It helps me appreciate the fact that life is short. It is. 70, 80, 90, 100 years, that's short. and you comparatively think about eternity. And so who am I supposed to be in this time that I'm here? In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, we're introduced to the preacher of the book, who seems to be Solomon. It says, so he's kind of just helping us understand the author here and the wisdom of the author. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and in verse 1, it says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. In chapter 2 and in verse 12, you're told that he has everything. You keep going on, the book ends, and again, it helps you understand this guy, this preacher, he's the son of David, he's the king of Israel in chapter 1 and verse 12. He has great knowledge in chapter 1 and verse 16. He has a lot of riches in chapter 2 verses 4 through 10. Solomon seems to be the author of the book, which is appropriate. So I'm going to stand here and tell you, money isn't that important. And your job isn't that important. And your life here isn't that important. And you're going to come, you're going to look at me, it's going to be tough for you to listen to me tell you money isn't important when I don't have money, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But Solomon does, and he did know what he was talking about. And so this is the author of the book, and the big purpose of the book is he is searching for the meaning of life. I got the water this time. He's searching for the meaning of life. And so he starts off in verses 1 and verse 2, and he says, vanities, in verse 2, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Verse 3, what advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? And that's the question he's asking himself. If you're in the ESV, it says, what profit does a man have for all his toils which he does under the sun? But what advantage do you have? How does it help you? How does it profit you? What gains do you have for everything that you do in this life? What's the point, is the question. What is the point of your life? And that's what Solomon is going to try to figure out. And so what he does in the book is the book breaks off, and really the entire book is him trying to figure it out. And he ends with a few verses and he comes to a conclusion. But the whole book is Solomon trying to figure out, how do I find lasting satisfaction in my life? How do I fill this empty life up? And I have a ton of stuff, and we're going to look at the things that he had. I had a ton of stuff. How am I filled up? How am I satisfied? And so let's look at some of the stuff that he has. Because I think what happens oftentimes is we think, no, if I had that, I'd be filled. It'd be enough for me. If I had more money, if I had a bigger house, if I had more power, if I had more knowledge, if I was the greatest at something, that'd be good enough for me. I tell you, Solomon didn't have one of those things. He had all of those things. And it wasn't good enough for him. Let's look at what he says here in chapter 2, starting in verse 1. And this was what the scripture reading was, but let's reread it here. He says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what is it accomplished? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely. And how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under the heaven, the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of waters for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. I also possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, kind of gives a good synopsis for the book. He's going to look at a few things. He's going to say, all right, so what is the point of life? How am I supposed to be filled? How am I supposed to have lasting satisfaction? So I'm going to try. I'm going to just kind of trial run. Kind of like whenever you're seeing what you're allergic to, Donnie was talking, you test a few different things and whatever comes up, that's what you're allergic to. I'm going to try a few different things and whatever comes up, maybe that's what will satisfy me. So verse 1, he tries and he says pleasure. And you know somebody, you know people like that, right? That their life is all about pleasure. And they think, if I just have fun all the time, it'll make me happy. Phrase that. If I just have fun all the time, it'll please me. The people who live Friday to Sunday, and they hate Monday to Thursday. They're miserable 4 days of the week, but boy, they're looking forward to that Friday. People who kind of, their lives, it's just one big party. That's what life is for them, one big party. Is there a real satisfaction in that? How are they the next day? You may be having fun during the party. And that's what he'll say. He'll say, like, look, when I was doing it, I was having fun. I enjoyed it, but it was still empty. We're not talking about, are you enjoying these things? The real question is this satisfying you? Is it enough? Is the question. And for people who make pleasure, whatever the pleasure is, who make fun, the point, the central point in their lives, is it enough? If you have made pleasure the central point in your life, has it been enough? You feel, do you have a sense of feeling of accomplishment and you feel good and you can sleep at night and like, no. And he didn't either. So he says, okay, so it's not pleasures. Well, verse 2, maybe it's laughter. You know, maybe everything is just a big joke and I'll turn everything into a joke and everything will be a comedy and everything will be fun. Everything will be funny and I won't take anything seriously. And you know people like that. That's the way they cope with the realities of life, is that everything is funny. He's like, this is crazy. That's what he says in verse 2. It's madness to think that's what's going to be it. That's not enough. That's not it. That doesn't bring full satisfaction. Well, verse 3, he says, let me try to stimulate my body with wine. You know, I'll drink a little, feel good. And I love what he says. He says, with wisdom. So he was getting drunk and he was passed out drunk. He was just drinking a little bit, you know, seeing if he could stimulate his body and feel good. And that wasn't it. In verses 4 through 6, he talks about building things. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. There's all these things that he built. He built this house. He had gardens. He had this and that. Well, that wasn't enough. Which I love what he does here, right? Because it's almost like this progression as a person, this growth as a person. And he's looking for different things. I read verse 1 and that, like verses 1 and 2, the pleasure and the laughter and everything's a joke and everything's fun. That seems like a kid. It seems like a young guy. And then like the buildings, you know, building a house and making his life about like, it almost seems more sophisticated, more mature. It almost seems more noble. It's just as empty. And you know, again, you know people like that. Their lives are just, if I had this house, I'm going to build this house and like, I'm going to have this thing. I'm going to build for myself. And that'll be it. That'll make me satisfied. And it doesn't. My father worked until cancer took him. He had no reason to work. He was done. He was in his 70s. He had did everything he needed to do. But he wanted a house that he didn't need. Like, he's one person. He wanted a house with 10 rooms in it. I'm not joking. He worked and got it built. And he died and never slept a day in that house. Like, that's kind of the point. Like, that's the point he'll make in chapter 3 and chapter 4. You'll work and work and work and you'll enlarge yourself. And you'll make all this money. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to die and someone else will enjoy it. And in verse 7 and in verse 8, he'll talk about then, so it wasn't building things. It wasn't this sense of accomplishment. Again, for some people, like, it's just school and a degree and being incredibly smart. He says, well, that's not it. It's not building stuff. Well, maybe if I just have money, maybe not just money, but like a ton of money and more money than everybody else and more possession than everybody else. He had slaves, male and female slaves. He had flocks, herds. This was a guy in power. He had money and not just his money, the treasures of kings and provinces. How do you get the treasures of kings and provinces? Like, he had other people's money too. Like, he was incredibly rich. Think about the richest man you know. He would have been richer than them. And the conclusion is still the same. He keeps going in verse 8. So maybe it's not just having things, but it's having women. And he had the pleasures of many men, many concubines. All the women you could want, he had them all. And that wasn't enough. But or maybe it's greatness. Maybe if I just become better than everybody else at a particular thing, maybe that'll be the thing that fills me up. That'll satisfy me. That won't be enough either, because you know what's going to happen? Someone else will come. It's going to be greater than you. It's interesting. If you look at like interviews of Michael Jordan, he's kind of a miserable man. Because he was the greatest in the world. Think about it. The greatest in the entire planet at a particular thing. And now there are some other young guys who are trying to take his spot. And he can't do anything about it because he's old now. He can't play now. And like, it's miserable. And so he's like, I became better and greater than everybody else. Everyone who preceded me, everyone who came before me, all my parents, my ancestors, all of them. I was the greatest, the absolute best. And maybe if that's you, that's awesome. Like, if you are greater than everybody else in this entire planet at something, that still won't be enough. He does all of this. And what is his conclusion in verse 11? Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labors which I had exerted. And behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind. And there was no profit or advantage under the sun. There's two reasons why this doesn't work. This model doesn't work. This thing that Solomon did. First reason is, do you notice the pronoun that shows up over and over again? Notice how many times I shows up? I said to myself, I explored, I built, I planted, I bought, I collected, I became great, I did this, I did that, I did this. Let me tell you, when you make your life about the I, you will end up empty. You won't be satisfied. And you think, I've got to look out for me because no one else will. If that's what you make your life, it won't be enough. You'll be miserable. That's the first problem he had. As he thought that if he did it, if he found it in himself, he was going to find this lasting satisfaction, and he didn't. The second problem is that I think he was confusing the enjoyment for the satisfaction. You notice what it says? He doesn't say, boy, I did all these things, and man, I hated myself. You know, it was miserable having all that money and building all that those houses and having these pleasures. Man, I didn't have fun. That's not what he says. And if you look at what he says in verses 9 and 10, he says, then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood with me. Verse 11, all that my eyes desired, I didn't refuse him. Anything he wanted, he got for himself. Anything he desired, he did. I didn't withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labors, and this was my reward. What was his reward for everything he did? It was that lasting, momentary, fleeting pleasure. Like, that was it. And here's the thing. If you make life about these things, about the pleasures and the fun and the laughter and the wine and the building things, the possessions, the money and the women and the greatness, or if that's what you make your life, you will have fun. He did. You will enjoy it. He did. The Bible doesn't say, and if you live out in the world, you're going to hate it and it's going to be super terrible. You'll enjoy it. How long is it going to last? And again, it doesn't answer the question, what's the point? And what's my purpose? Because here's the thing. I think sometimes people, They leave the Lord and they go to the world and they're like, wait, I thought the world was terrible and miserable and not fun and this place with like dragons and fire and this and that and it's kind of fun here. And they forget. Yeah, it is. But it cannot satisfy you. Like, that's the problem. The problem isn't
whether you'll enjoy it or not. He enjoyed it. The problem was it enough? And it wasn't. And it wasn't because it couldn't be. This world can't be enough. Like it's not a problem with you. It's a problem with the world. The world wasn't made to be enough for you. It's like you have this, you ever seen like those kid games that it has like the circle and the square and the triangle and you're supposed to put the shape where it goes? There's this hole in your heart and the world's block doesn't fit there. It has its own place, but it doesn't fit there where your heart is. And what you need is the Lord. And so how am I supposed to find fulfillment in a broken world? Like, how am I supposed to find my value, my fulfillment in the fact that this world is broken? I think the first thing that we need to realize is that you need to understand that the brokenness of the world needs to create a desire for fulfillment or for wholeness. Look at what he says in chapter 1 and in verse 15. This is Solomon talking about the world here. And he writes and he says, what is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. He'll kind of repeat the idea in chapter 7 and in verse 13. But here's the point that he's making. This world is crooked. You can't make it straight. You know, it's a puzzle with missing pieces. You cannot finish it. What's lacking cannot be counted. This world is broken. And whenever I can realize that the world is broken, that's a good thing. That's step one. Because whenever I realize that this world is broken, that this world cannot fill me up, it's lacking, whenever I see that, then you know what it should do? It should create a desire for something else, for something better. Because the answer isn't here. It's not here in this earth. And so, how do I find fulfillment in a broken world? Well, first of all, understand that the world is broken. Right, but I think a second thing that we have to learn to do is these are some practical things here, is you have to learn to enjoy the things under the sun without giving them absolute purpose. Like that is just a biblical teaching that Solomon teaches here in Ecclesiastes, that you see it in Proverbs. We have to learn to do the things here under the sun, because you have to do them, but not give them absolute purpose. Notice what he says in chapter 2 and verses 24 and 25. So after thinking about labor and the idea of work, and he's like, what's the point of working if you're going to work and work and work and then die and someone else will keep everything you worked for? What's the purpose of that? What's the point of that? He gets to his conclusion there, and there's like these little mini conclusions throughout the book. He gets to his conclusion in that, and he gets to verse 24, and he says, there is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. Because who can eat and have his enjoyment without him? And here's the point that he's making in verses 24 and 25. And he'll make the same point in chapter 3. He'll talk about there's a time for this, there's a time for that. You don't really have control, is that idea. Like that poem that he kind of gives in chapter 3, there's a time for this, a time for that, a time. His point is, there are some fixed things that everybody goes through and you have no control over. And so how do I live a life that I have no control over? Again, chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks and sees the good in his labor, for it is the gift of God. Chapter 5, verse 18. Here is what I have seen, to be good and fitting to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given to him, for this is his reward. Chapter 8, verse 15. So I commended pleasure, for there is nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat and drink and be merry. This will stand with him in his toils throughout the days of his life which God has given him under the sun. Here's the point. Solomon isn't saying, this world is broken, don't do anything here because it's broken. He says, like, this world is broken, and you have to work, you have to eat, it's okay to have pleasure. By the way, like, that list that we were talking about, pleasure and laughter and building things and possession and like, having or being in a relationship and being great at something, is any of that inherently bad? It is not. It is not bad to have fun. It isn't bad to build something. It's not bad to accomplish something. It's not bad, like, none of that is bad. What makes it bad is when you make it the thing that your life is centered on. That's the problem. And I think that's the issue that we have, is that I end up making that thing the thing my life is about. And it's not enough. And so the real point, how do I find fulfillment in that? He says, do that. But realize what it is. It's temporary. It's this thing that isn't absolute. I play basketball a lot. I like playing basketball. You know what I don't do when I play basketball? I don't treat it like it's my life. You know why? Because at some point, I got to get off the court and actually go live my life. It's a game. Or the best way I think about this is you've played Monopoly, right? Think about Monopoly. You can play Monopoly, and you can be imagine you are the best Monopoly player you know. And so every time you play, you don't just get all the houses. You own all the hotels. You have all the money. You have all the territory. You have all of this, all of that. You never go to jail. You never do this. You never do that. You're the best at Monopoly. You have all the money, all the little 500 orange money things, whatever. You have all of it. And you feel good. It's fun. But then what happens? And it goes back in the box. And the game is done, and you have to live your real life. That's what this life is. Do not make this life it, because it's not. Learn to enjoy the things in this life without giving it its absolute purpose. Whenever you make, and again, even with good things, whenever you make it the absolute thing, it'll screw you up. A job working is a good thing. Working is not a bad thing. It's commended. God actually tells people, I mean, he tells in the New Testament, if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. Like, there's a sense where you should be working. Be responsible. But work cannot be your life. It's a thing. It's not the thing. What about relationships? Even in your marriage. My wife will be my wife for however long I am alive. Or however long she is alive. Like, we are married to the rest of our lives. But then we're going to be living after this life is done. It is not like your kids will be your kids however long you're both alive. But then after that, like, it's done. And there are more important things. And the problem is that we just think God is a key in the keychain. God is not a key in the keychain. He is the keychain that holds everything together. And everything else in your life is centered around that keychain. And so we have to learn to do so. Again, you need to understand that this world is broken. And if I can understand that this world is broken, that's good. Because if I understand that this world is broken, then I can enjoy the things in this world, and I'm putting them in their proper place. They don't have absolute purpose in my life, because they can't. They shouldn't. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. We need to, how do I find fulfillment in this world, or in a broken world? You need to learn to so verses 1 through 4, he'll write and he'll say, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portions to seven or even to eight, for you don't know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they may pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward the north or the south, whether the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the path of the wind, verse 5, and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Here's like pretty, especially those first few verses, like cast your bread upon the waters. The idea of that casting the bread upon the waters, for in many days you will find it. I love that concept there, because what you're saying is you are saying no to something now to say yes to something later. And again, like we have to learn to enjoy things under the sun without giving them absolute purpose. But we also have to learn to say no to things today to enjoy every tomorrow in eternity. Like, there are some things under the sun that we can't do because we're looking for something better. But how do you really find fulfillment in this broken world? Right, because we still haven't talked. We talked about things that, like, all right, I can do this while I'm here, but that really doesn't fill me up. That really doesn't give me purpose. So Solomon writes the entire book trying to find satisfaction, actual satisfaction and purpose. And he starts to wrap up, and he, again, even throughout the book, he kind of sprinkles in some things that'll help you enjoy your life here. But he still hasn't talked about how to have your purpose here. He ends the book. In the last two verses, he writes, he says, the conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. Or this is the all of man. For God will bring every act into judgment, which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. And have you ever thought about the way the book ends? It almost like sounds somber and scary, and I hate that. God's bringing everything into judgment. That doesn't seem like a good thing. Except I think it is. So how do you have purpose in this life? The only reason you have purpose in this life is because of God. And because God someday will judge this life. Let me ask you a question. Maybe you are more studious than me. But if a teacher gave me homework and told me she wasn't grading it, I was not doing that homework. There was no grade. There's nothing to look forward to. If I had a class and I knew that there wasn't a test on a particular thing, I wasn't studying that. That had no purpose to me. But if I knew there was a test, I was going to pay attention. I was going to study. And it seems weird and it seems twisted and it seems backwards, but what Solomon really is saying is that purpose in your life is given through the judgment that God will have. If there is no judgment, if God will never judge the world, then your life is absolutely empty. And it'll stay empty. If there is no judgment, if God is not going to judge the good things or the bad things that I do, then I can live my life however I want to live. I can treat people however I want to treat people, because you know what? After I'm dead and it doesn't matter. But because there is a judgment, it actually gives value to my life. It gives purpose to my life. Because I can live my life here in this empty, broken world and be making investments to a real world, to a world that's lasting and to a world that's satisfying. And if you want to find out, how do I give purpose here to my life? Live your life here thinking about the next one and preparing for the next one. Live your life here with judgment in mind. And it doesn't make sense. It's backwards. And let me tell you, judgment is not a scary thing when you are prepared for it. There were many a tests I didn't want to take because I had no idea what was going to be on them. But there were some tests that I was extra excited for because I knew what was going to be on there. I prepped. I was ready for it. Judgment day isn't this day where like God is looking to kill people and send people to hell. Like, that's not the idea. God is looking to give you full satisfaction. He's looking to reward you if you've done what you're supposed to do. So how do I give satisfaction to my life? How do I give real worth and value to my life? Got to learn to fear God and keep His commandments. I am revering God. As remember, talk about fear, this reverence, where it's what He says and not what I say. Where it's what he thinks and not what I think. That's why we were studying Proverbs these last few days. Remember, we talked that wisdom means the art of reaching an end by the right means. Why does it matter where you're going if there's not an end? Why run a race if there's not an end? There's not. Why run it? There's no purpose. So what are you worth? God would argue that you're worth a lot more than you think you are. It's interesting. Jesus kind of echoes these phrases in Mark chapter 8. You don't have to turn there because I don't remember where the verses are. It's in the mid-30s, but I'm going to paraphrase it. It's Bill's paraphrasing of Jesus in Mark 8. Jesus says, what does it profit a man if he gained the whole world and lost his soul? Which is kind of what Solomon is at. What profit do I have here? He says, what does it profit a man if you gained everything, if you had everything, and lost the only thing that was worth anything? He says, you actually want to have life?
You want to give your life purpose. You want to give your life meaning. You want to give your life satisfaction. Lose it here. Deny yourself here. And follow after me. If you're here and you've been living outside of God's wisdom, outside of God's rule, and here's the thing, His wisdom aren't just like advice, take it or leave it. These are commandments for us. You've been living outside of that. You know that your life is empty. You know that there's something missing. You know that it hasn't been enough. Because one day in sin is one day too many. What does it profit you to live that way? If you really want to give your life satisfaction, if you really want to give your life purpose, deny yourself and follow after Him. If we can help you in any way, you can come forward while we stand and while we sing.